So what's number 17? Tesham jnani nitya yuktaha.
Tesham jnani nitya yuktaha.
Eka bhaktir vishishyate.
Eka bhaktir vishishyate.
Priyo hi jnani notyartham.
Priyo hi jnani notyartham.
Aham sacha mama priyaha.
Aham sacha priyaha.
Tesham jnatukni nitya yuktaha. Eka bhaktir vishishyate. Priyo hi jnani notyartham. Aham sacha mama priyaha. So he says they are all sukriti, all are very virtuous. But out of them, who is the best? Tesham, out of these, jnani, vishishyate, in the first line, jnani, vishishyate. Why does he excel? Vishishyate means he excels, he is the best. Why? Because two qualities Bhagavan gives us, nitya yuktaha and eka bhakti. Nitya yukta means always united with that Lord, and eka bhakti means one goal, one purpose he has in life. And then he says, priyo hi jnani no artha ati artham. So he says, priya, I, aham, jnani na, of the jnani, I am dear, ati artham. Artha means object, a thing, ati artham is beyond everything. So the jnani loves me beyond anything and everything. He is the one. Does not... Anything in the world is not equal to what he wants from me, or what he, how much he loves me. He loves me more than anything else in the world, more than anybody. So he says, okay, jnani loves you. How about you? What do you do? He says, sacha mama priyaha. He is as much sacha, and he also mama to me priyaha. He is as dear to me as I am to him or her. So, this out of the four, jnani is the one who is always connected with me, has one goal in life, and loves me, and I love him. So, that is the translation of the verse. And what we see here is that, is anybody able to see the group, Zoom group chat on the right, the white? No. Okay, so it has not come. Maybe next time we'll try to do it. So, in the first thing we see that Bhagwan has given a certificate. You know that type kar do upar. The certificate that jnani is the best. So it is a certificate, it is a proof from the Lord. And what is the meaning of nitya yukta? Nitya yukta means he's always united, his mind is always stationed in the Lord, he's always connected. Whatever he is doing at any time, whoever he sees, whatever activity is going on, from morning to night, he is constantly remembering the Lord and Lord alone. It's not that the person has to give up their activities, but make themselves one-pointed. And that's what he says, eka bhakti. There is only one purpose, one goal. Bhakti does not only mean chanting, but he invokes the Lord's grace and surrenders all his activities to the Lord. So there is only eka bhakti. But in our case, what is our situation? So Bhagwan gives a very beautiful description in the second chapter of the rest of us. He says, bahu shakha yanantascha buddhya avyavasayinam. He says, those people like us who are not single-pointed, not focused, what is our bahushaka, many directions, our mind is all the time running in different directions. And ananta vichara, he says we have numerous thoughts and we have numerous desires. And among all the desires, yeah, one desire is God, but then there are so many other desires that our focus gets dispersed, gets diluted. Why? Because we do not have that single-pointed one focus alone, and we are not all the time united with God. And that is why our actions become very extrovert, where I am seeking for things outside instead of seeking it. Extrovert tendencies, because he realizes that nothing in this temporary world is going to give me permanent joy. If I need everlasting permanent joy, I have to unite with God, God who is within me. And none of the physical, mental, or intellectual comforts bother him. At the body level, you know, he knows that God is functioning through my body. All my actions are devoted to God. At the mind level, his heart is filled with love for God. And at the intellectual level, he understands, knows God. And for him, nothing is better. Gurudev says that this person has selfless identification. The extent of love is to the extent we identify. Like, for example, a mother, when something happens to her daughter, it's like it's happening to me. That's how she feels. That's the degree of identification and then that you can extend to your family. Then you can extend to your community, to your city, to your country, and ultimately to the whole world, and ultimately to the God who is the subtotal of the entire universe. So to the extent you identify with that and you say that and I are one, and to the extent the identification is selfless. See, that is another point that we have to understand, that I approach God and I become one with God, or I pray so that I may become close to God. Not through God, I get something else. I get either an object or a relief from suffering. Then God becomes secondary and the object becomes primary, that my goal is to get that job. And so I use God. Bhagavan says, even then I'm okay with it, because at least you are coming to me. But a jnani comes without expecting anything. And his love for God is so powerful that it attracts love back. That's what Bhagavan says. Jnani no hi atyartham priya. I am exceedingly dear to him, and he is exceedingly dear to me. So that's what we find in this world, that when we approach somebody with anger, with hatred, then what happens? You create the same energy, the same vibrations. That if I'm angry or if I'm hating somebody, then that's what I will receive. But if you offer unconditional, total love, where there is nothing else I'm wanting, nothing else I'm expecting, and also not only for God, but even in the world, say a person loves a girl for what I can get, you know, because her father is a rich businessman, so I'll get a good job and then I'll inherit the property. Then his love is conditioned. It is selfish. But if he says, I love her regardless of what happens, and even if things change or situations change, that is unconditional love. And when we approach God with that kind of unconditional love, then God says, I'm forced to reciprocate. I don't have a choice. I have to reciprocate that love that you offer to me. And there's a very beautiful story I just heard, where Surdasji, as you know, he was blind. He didn't have the eyes, but the inner Gyan Chakshu had lit up. His wisdom was profound, though his eyes were blind. And so one day he was going through a forest to go to a village, and he had gone on that path before many times. So he thought he would make it, but for some reason he lost track. And so now he was off the road and he couldn't hear anything, and he was lost in the forest and he didn't know where to go. And suddenly he hears the voice of a little boy, and the voice says, oh, come on, I'll take you. Where do you want to go? He says, oh, I want to go to so-and-so village. So the boy says, okay, you hold my hand and I'll take you. And so he's holding Surdasji's hand and leading him. And he has a very soft touch and very divine soft voice and soft steps. And Surdasji said, something is not right. You know, he's not an ordinary child. And as they get closer and closer to the village, Surdasji figures out who this is. And the moment he figures out, that boy disappears, because by then he is close to the village. And Surdasji blindly is trying to reach and catch him, and you know, he's gone. So then he says, Bhagwan, wahan se to bhaag gaye, par yahan se bhaag ke dikhao. That means from there you ran away, but try to run away from my heart. It's not going to happen. You can't do that. So that's what you see that in this story, that the amount of love Surdas ji had for Bhagwan, Shri Krishna, he reciprocated that, came and helped him. So that's what they say, that just as this person loves God, God loves him equally. And Bhagwan Shri Krishna says, this is my matam, this is my opinion. And Gurudev in his commentary, and also before I have heard him say that, that in all the other faiths, whether it's Christianity or Islam or Buddhism or Jainism, great prophets came, whether it was Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha or Bhagwan Mahavir, and they gave us these teachings, this knowledge, but then there was no additional information. There were no additional prophets or teachers who came, and this knowledge is the opinion of one great master, one great prophet. But the Sanatan Dharma, that is our the Vedic faith, over thousands of years, various scholars, various masters, various realized great rishis have contributed. And that's why we have 108 Upanishads. Each one of them is unique, but the essential truth of them is one, which explains that all of these people over thousands of years, they have tried this knowledge and they have all come to the same conclusion. So there has been a constant addition over the years, thousands of years, to the original knowledge, and this knowledge has been reinforced. So when Bhagwan says it is my matam, my opinion, it does not mean that it ends there, but it just reinforces what other masters and other teachers have taught. So that is why the word matam is used. But why is Jnani dear to Bhagwan? And why is Bhagwan dear to us? So why? Because Atma, because of me. So like when I go to approach Lord for relief from suffering, they say, I am suffering, O Lord, so relieve my suffering. Or another person says, I want knowledge, God, give me knowledge. A third one says, I want this object. So I, this Atma, this self, is what we are trying to satisfy. And why? Because I am most dear to myself. What is the object that is most dear to me? I want, I should be happy. I should be comfortable. I should be. So that I, in the case of the Jnani, he says, Jnani says, my Atma is what? Is Bhagwan. So when the Lord is my Atma, so then there is nothing for me to ask, because God and I are one. You and I, we still feel that I am separate. And so by getting this, I'll be happy. But his happiness comes only in getting Lord. So that is what he says. Jnani is my Atma. And what is my Atma? That we will study in the next verse. Bhagwan will expand on this word, Atma, and why this Jnani is exceedingly dear to me.